This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5. And Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395 6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Tehran and Moscow have signed a comprehensive strategic partnership agreement. The much-anticipated signing ceremony was held in the Russian capital, Moscow. Iran's President Masoud Pezeshkian and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin hailed the agreement as a new chapter in relations between the two countries. For Iran, the deal provides avenues to bypass U.S. and EU sanctions through trade in national currencies, barter systems, and alternative payment mechanisms. Let's take a look at some of the details of that agreement in this report.
Tehran and Moscow have signed a comprehensive strategic partnership agreement in Moscow. Following the signing ceremony, Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian hailed the agreement as a new chapter.
The partnership treaty that was signed today opens a new chapter in relations between Iran and Russia in all spheres, especially in the trade and economic cooperation. I'm confident that this treaty, which has been drawn up on the basis of areas of mutual interest, will create new pathways for expansion of new and bright horizons in collaboration between Russia and Iran.
The deal provides avenues for Iran to bypass U.S. and EU sanctions through trade in national currencies, barter systems, and alternative payment mechanisms. The two sides agreed to help each other counter common security threats. They also agreed that if either side was subjected to aggression, the other would not provide assistance to the aggressor. Iran and Russia will also support expanding bilateral trade and economic cooperation in all areas. Russian President Vladimir Putin also hailed the agreement. He said both his country and Iran are resolutely opposed to external pressure from abroad.
Our countries firmly uphold the principles of the rule of international law, the sovereignty of states, non-interference in the internal affairs of other countries. We are pursuing an independent course on the world stage, jointly and resolutely opposing external pressure.
The document is expected to bring relations between Moscow and Tehran to a new level. It enshrines their status as strategic partners. The agreement also establishes a legal framework for the further development of cooperation in the long term. According to Russian-Iranian officials, the agreement covers all spheres, including defense, counterterrorism, energy, finance, transport, industry, agriculture, culture, science, and engineering. Many believe that the partnership elevates Iran's diplomatic stature, showing that it can forge significant alliances despite Western isolation efforts.
Well, here are our guests for tonight's show. Activist and commentator Meek Napier joining us from Glasgow. And we also have journalist and podcaster Esha Krishnaswamy joining us from St. Petersburg. Welcome to the program, to the both of our guests. Mr. Napier, let's discuss the significance of this agreement and its implications both regionally and globally.
Well, it's what one would call a no-brainer. Both Russia and Iran have been subjected to what Donald Trump calls maximum pressure from sanctions, from attempts to damage the economy, from attempts to cause regime change through increasing pain on the populations of each country. It's difficult to see how much further they could go, but it's already two very extreme regimes of sanctions that America's imposed on Russia and on Iran separately. So it makes perfect sense for them to deepen relations economically and politically. I mean, we now have a full spectrum, almost, relationship between these two important states. Both of them also have warm relations with China. So you now have a bloc stretching from the Baltic in Europe to the Pacific. And, you know, America takes on one opponent at a time, and an opponent means any country which refuses to bow the knee, any country which shows signs of independence from the American imperium. But when this bloc comes together, I think you have something which America might break its teeth on economically, because this is simply a huge bloc, a huge economy, a huge couple of economies coupling. They have much to gain from each other. And I think it gives each of them, both of them, defenses against this long-standing American economic aggression, you'd have to call the sanctions, and clear attempts at regime change in Tehran, and I think even attempts at regime change in Moscow. So this is a perfect riposte to outgoing Biden and to incoming Trump, and I think it will give them a bit of a headache in Washington about how to deal with this.
Ms. Krishnaswamy in St. Petersburg, this strategic partnership is being described as a milestone in Iranian-Russian ties. Let's talk more about the key components of the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership Agreement and what stands out the most for you in this deal.
The one that stands out most is the alternative payment methods and the use of and the de-dollarization, as in Russia and Iran have agreed to use tumans and rubles as opposed to any third-party currency. And that is the first step in trying to lay the multipolar world and to cut the U.S. ability to sanction at will, because the U.S. relies on the fact that most international trade is done on the dollar. And if it's not done on the dollar, they don't have the same ability. Their sanctions won't have the same devastating reach as it would if the dollar was, as long as the dollar is ubiquitously used, their sanctions tend to have a bigger impact, and this will help reduce that. Another thing is that's very interesting is that one of the facets of cooperation is against the terrorism. And we know that Iran has a lot of terrorist activities coming from the West with Al-Qaeda type sympathizers, et cetera. And so does Russia. And it is also a way to signal that they plan on opposing the new Syrian government if they are to trample upon the rights of different people. And also trying, and so that's another thing that stands out. And the third thing that stands out is the sharing of intelligence. So I think that will make it much easier for them to oppose Western actions within the region that is getting more and more belligerent.
Sure. And Mr. Napier, in what ways can this agreement allow both countries to counter, bypass, and circumvent Western sanctions?
Well, I'm not an expert economist. But the fact that these two blocks, that these two sizable economies come together and remove barriers to trade can develop methods of payment bilaterally, which do not rely so heavily on the dollar. The dollar, the dominant position of the dollar in international trade has in many ways been the key weapon that America has used. They deploy aircraft carriers, but they also deploy the almost forced use of the dollar in international trade to insulate America from the normal laws of gravity, of economic gravity, that other countries face. America can print massive amounts of dollars and then spend them and then put them into the international market. These two economies coming together, the great opportunities for bilateral trade and trade with other countries indirectly as well, as I said earlier, I think creates a great headache for Washington. The size of the bloc, the power of the bloc, gives it immunity in its own right. So looking forward, we expect trade to rise. We expect the complementary industries. Russia is the largest exporter of oil in the world. Iran's a major producer. The possibilities for synergies between these two industries is huge. And I think, once again, the very size of the bloc, the removal of the barriers to trade, the possibility of avoiding the use of the dollar for a big chunk of world trade here is extremely significant going forward. And once again, the fact that both countries are in BRICS is also very important. So something is coming together in a way that wasn't there 20-odd years ago, a system of alliances of various different strengths. But within this system of alliances that BRICS represents, we have an intensification and a qualitative development of the alliance between Iran and Russia, which could very well spread, could provide an example for other countries facing these harsh, vicious sanctions from the USA if they dare to oppose core aspects of imperial policy. So I think it's a very powerful example, as well as something which can be expected to erect defences around both countries because the internal barriers will be coming down.
Ms. Krishnaswamy, what specific benefits does Russia gain from increased bilateral trade with Iran? There's, of course, the energy collaboration, joint infrastructure projects like the North-South Transport Corridor. If you can tell us more, and also the same question that we issued to Mr. Napier, how can enhanced economic cooperation between Iran and Russia insulate both countries from Western sanctions?
The primary way is through building of alternative monetary systems. Like right now, everyone has to go through SWIFT, and that is controlled by the U.S., and they can pull it any time, as they've done with Iran many times. So that's the first thing. Russia is makes a lot of crude oil, but they need refineries that Iran can build. And so right now, that would help enhance the trade. And also, since both countries are sanctioned, they can trade with each other to get products that good products without worrying about sanctions. So both countries can enhance availability of more consumer products with their technology. And so I think those are the main ways. And if like Russia, big countries like Russia, Iran, China, et cetera, start moving away from the dollar's hegemony, that will give incentive to smaller countries to also join, because it will give the smaller countries an alternative. And we've already seen some countries in their trade with Russia and China and Iran are not using the dollar. So I think that is the main thing, is that it takes away power from the West to engage in economic warfare. Also, with regards to the West constantly tries to coup both Iran and Russia through, like in 2022, they had the color revolution. And if they're sharing more intelligence and cooperation, that means that the West is unlikely to succeed in these color revolutions that they constantly try in both countries.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Mr. Napier, this partnership, as we mentioned, enhances economic, political, and security cooperation between the two nations. But can enhanced collaboration with Russia also amplify Iran's voice in international forums like the SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and BRICS?
Now, of course. I mean, just in passing, both countries face very concerted attacks from the US-led collective West. Russia faces a war in Ukraine due to NATO constantly encroaching without any limitation to its appetite on Russia, building bases along the border. Iran obviously faces a bitterly hostile United States and Israel, who are trying to find allies in the Middle East and obviously want to inflict the maximum damage.
Okay, I believe we're experiencing some technical difficulties there. I'm going to allow my colleagues to figure that out, but we're going to address another question to Ms. Krishnaswamy in St. Petersburg. Esha, what message does this agreement send to the U.S. and its allies? More importantly, that we're just a few days away from Trump taking office again. Do you think that this signals a united front against external pressures from NATO, particularly in the context of the ongoing tensions with the U.S. and Israel, when we're looking at what's happening in the region right now?
Absolutely, because it sends us a message that Iran is not alone in this fight. If Russia is going to back up Iran like it did with Syria, it's going to be much more difficult. U.S. and Israel have for decades had a desire to overthrow the current government, current system of governance in Iran, for a government that is more malleable to U.S. interests. And with increasing, with Iran getting increasingly involved in other areas within in the region, such as in Yemen and Lebanon, it'll make them think twice before trying to attack those smaller countries with much weaker militaries. So I think that is the message they want to send. And yeah, that's about it.
Okay, Mr. Napier, we lost you there for a moment. I'd like you to pick up where you left off regarding the voice of Iran, amplifying the voice of Iran in organizations such as the SCO and BRICS.
Of course. The U.S. works assiduously, and its allies work in a very determined way to isolate both Russia and Iran. It's quite simply a checkmate, in a sense, when the two come together in this way. Russia faces an attack from the West, from NATO, from the collective West, which is extremely serious, determined to inflict maximum damage on Russia, determined to inflict a strategic defeat to leave Russia much weaker, and NATO is explicit about this. On the other hand, in the Middle East, America is trying to build, with some success, a coalition, including Israel and some Arab countries, against Iran. In that situation, to have your back covered changes things very dramatically. And it means that both countries can face their enemies, can face the attackers with a greater degree of confidence. This can be based on military trade. It can be based on secure borders because there's a strategic alliance. It can be based on economy. And, of course, it can be based on military cooperation as well. The idea of tackling one of these countries and bringing it down and then moving on to tackle the other one, that's now gone. You have to take on both at the same time. And although the agreement falls short of a military partnership whereby an attack on one would immediately lead to joint military action by both, it's still significant. And the West will see it as very significant. So the specific weight of Iran internationally has just been increased. Russia breaks out of its isolation to a greater degree, but Iran also benefits from the fact that Russia is one of the founding members of BRICS, has solid relations with both India and China, for example, the two gigantic powers in the world now, and Iran is now part of that loose alliance of BRICS. But it certainly provides protection against America, and it certainly increases the number of governments who will be developing warmer relations with the Islamic Republic.
Ms. Krishnaswamy, can you explain how this partnership supports a multipolar global order? That's definitely a joint vision shared by Iran and Russia, the goal of challenging the U.S.-led unipolarity and conjuring a multipolar global system. Many say that we could be at the beginning of a shift in superpowers from the West to the East.
Absolutely. In one way, it strengthens the industrial base of both Russia and Iran. The second way is definitely, as I mentioned, de-dollarization and getting away from the dollar hegemony, because the dollar is used as a weapon in so many U.S.-led sanctions. The third way is that the third way is, of course, countries are forced to take on loans from the IMF or World Bank for quote-unquote development projects. With countries like Russia and Iran, they don't have the same kind of agreement of privatization, austerity, etc., that they give to loans. So when with third-party countries, Russia and Iran together may be able to lessen the effects of IMF structural adjustments programs. So I think those are the ways it strengthens it. And another thing is that Russia is a member of the UN Security Council, which means they have a unilateral veto power. So Iran, when Iran comes to the UN with its interest and with Russia's cooperation, they will have more of a voice within the UN Security Council in order to move their issues forward. So I think those are the main three ways.
Mr. Napier, there's definitely another viewpoint to all of this. What do you, in your opinion, what are the potential long-term implications of this partnership for the geopolitical landscape in West Asia? During the Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian's speech at the signing ceremony, he blasted foreign intervention in the region, stressing that there is no need for extra regional players there.
I think what's unique about what some people in Europe and America call the Middle East, in West Asia, I think what's unique about it is that there is a state in the area which has been planted and developed by Britain and then by the USA called Israel, which is a foreign intervention into the area. Not just like a couple of permanently staged aircraft carriers, but something even more powerful. And that acts very much as an agent of the collective West. So anything which challenges that, which brings together Russia and Iran, is something to be welcomed. But here's the problem. The problem is that when the balance of power changes in the world, and if we take a long view historically, when Germany was rising as a strong economic power, and Britain and France ran most of the world as colonies, that rebalancing was decided by global war or by an international war. So now that China, and following that, there was a period when there was a balance between two superpowers, the Soviet Union and America, and America was kept in check. With the collapse of the Soviet Union, we went into the recent stage of a unipolar world where America could crash its weight around, overthrow governments. One after the other. But now, with the changing balance, I think it's very complex in West Asia, because now that America is weakening and is, by the way, clearly determined to damage the Chinese economy in every way that it possibly can to preserve US domination as long as possible. But in that situation, with America weakening, it's dangerous because their strength in West Asia will diminish. But I think that might mean that they give more investment, more arms, have more reliance on Israel to try to attack neighbouring countries that displease the USA. It's difficult to see how that's going to play out, because Israel also has failed to defeat Hamas or defeat the Lebanese resistance. They scored the victory in Syria, of course, but it's still not possible to see long term. But the long range problem is that America's a wounded beast facing a rising China, facing this alliance between Iran and Russia, and capable of causing great damage because they feel wounded and they feel the tide of history moving against them.
Ms. Krishnaswamy, before we wrap up this segment, I want you to also address the same question, the potential long-term ramifications of this partnership for the region, for West Asia.
To the north of Iran, there's Azerbaijan and Armenia, and we've known that Azerbaijan tends to smuggle oil through Turkey into Israel. With Iran and Russia increasing their borders, border security, that might make it much harder for Azerbaijan to send oil to Israel. And that will definitely make it harder for Israel to enact its belligerence. So that's the one way. The other way is through the idea that if one country is attacked by any of the other countries, Iran will stop providing, Iran or Russia won't provide any support to the belligerent countries. And so that means that countries will have to think twice before trying to attack Iran. And with regards to the stability of the region that is being destroyed by Israel, Russia actually has a very good beef against Israel, because regardless of how often Israel cries anti-Semitism, they have been supporting Ukrainian fighters that that I strongly identified with the Nazi Party, like the Azov Battalion, for many, many years, and providing them with the weapons. So I think it's also in Russia's interest to contain Israel and its belligerents, because we know that they have been providing
Israel. That's all the time we have for tonight's show. Allow me to thank my guests, activist and commentator Big Napier, joining us from Glasgow. And thanks to journalist and podcaster Esha Krishnaswamy, joining us from St. Petersburg. And a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's edition of Spotlight. It's good night for now.
This title given to the 11th Imam, Al-Askari, is because of a military camp.
Al-Kindi, he was a philosopher who lived during the time of Imam Hassan Al-Askari. When he gets there, he finds Imam moving towards a community who are anticipating him.
This is Dialogue, an introduction on the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Hassan ibn Ali al-Askari, alayhi salam, the father of the 12th divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, was the 11th Imam of the Infallible Imams from the Ahlul Bayt of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. The blessed and pious Imam carried the banner of Islam, undertook the goals of the religion, and sacrificed his life unto this way. He was indeed a fountainhead of knowledge and wisdom. He faced many incredible difficulties and tragedies and hardships in order to spread and promote and keep intact the high values and goals of the religion of Islam. Truly, there are so many countless favors that have been bestowed upon the Muslims by the divinely appointed Imams, the infallible and immaculate Imams, including Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about the beautiful dialogues and conversations of Imam Hassan ibn Ali al-Askari alayhi salam. We have been following up, of course, on this conversation that Imam Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam that he has with a very esteemed and prominent companion and Shia scholar by the name of Abul Hassan Ali ibn al-Husayn al-Qummi, who is, of course, from the city of Qom, and he is considered to be one of the great and eminent scholars of the Shia sect. We were going through some recommendations and talking a little bit about them and see what we can learn from them. You know, we had reached to a point where Imam al-Askari, alayhi salam, he says to Abul Hassan Ali ibn al-Husayn al-Qummi that as a recommendation to be patient, to learn the religion, to be certain of things, and to undertake the recitation of the Holy Quran. And I think it's good to pause here Being patient is something that is incredibly important. It is valuable. It is a part of Islam, right? And this is something that we've been talking about throughout this conversation, is the different aspects that Islam puts forth and recommends, these kind of virtues and qualities that, you know, sometimes we think that these virtues that Islam puts forth are things that we adorn ourselves with, which, you know, we don't really find a lot of it being relevant to us, or we don't find a personal benefit in these things because we think of them as adornments. We think of them like, you know, it's a really nice jacket that I put on, or it's a really nice pair of shoes. Today I'll wear the shoes of humbleness. Tomorrow I will wear the shoes of, I don't know, honesty. And the day after that I'll wear the shoes of patience. When in reality, these are not different things that we necessarily adorn ourselves with and are separate from us. But these various, you know, virtues and ethical qualities and morals, patience and, you know, courage and honesty and modesty and truthfulness, generosity, all of these things should become a part of us. They should become a part of our essence of who we are. And it is then when we begin to see a spiritual transformation within us. If we start to separate these morals and these ethical qualities from who we are, then we haven't really achieved what Allah the Almighty wants us to achieve. And so here, being patient is this idea of being steadfast, to continue to struggle to be on the path of the Almighty Allah, to continue to do the right thing, to continue to fight against the insinuations and the whispers of Satan. And this patience, this struggle, this resistance is what pushes us forward and closer to the Almighty Allah. This is Dialogue, Imam Al-Askari, alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Very briefly, you know, Imam was born in Medina in the year 232 of the Hijrah, and his shahadat and wafat happened in Samarra. He was 28 years old. And during that time, the last 6 years was the period of his imamat. So his imamat era was very short, but very crucial, because this comes just at the before the beginning of the occultation and the ghibat of the imam of the present time. This title given to the 11th imam, Al-Askari, is because of a military camp. In Arabic, you would call, you know, this is the place of Askar. Askar means army. And that also shows that, you know, the place where they were allowed even to buy a house was supposed to be in an area where the army or the officers of Mutawakkil and his government would be able to keep a, you know, close watch on the imam and his movements, or those who are coming to see him. And this is where we come to realize that, you know, there was a lot of restrictions and suffocation as far as communication and meetings of the imam with the Shias. And this is the same time. So already 11th imam, even before his imamat, is in Samarra with his father. And this is the same era where you have Mutawakkil, who expresses his hatred towards Ahlul Bayt by preventing the Shias from going for the ziyarat of Imam Hussain, to the extent that he even tried to erase any trace of the grave of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He was not successful in that, but that was the intent. What you see now in form of, you know, the ideology of the Salafis and Wahhabis, that wherever they go, the very first important thing for them is to destroy all the shrines and the graves of the awliya of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, whether it's in Saudi Arabia or when ISIS was in control in parts of Syria and Iraq for a short time. Of course, you know, people like Mutawakkil are gone, but the shrine of Hussein is still there.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Dialogue. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
For African states, joining the BRICS group is the best way to truly obtain economic independence. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. RT wrote, after the Suez Crisis of 1956, when France and Britain left the African continent and the colonially controlled states gained independence, Africa saw rapid growth of political independence from 1957 into the 1960s. However, the freedom given to Africans was mostly political to satisfy the demand of the rising American empire against the declining French and British colonial empires. The economies of most of the African countries were and still are heavily controlled by the system set up during the colonial era. The economies of these countries are heavily export-led, principally raw materials, masked in the name of earning forex, while in reality it looks more like colonial exploitation of locals than any genuine desire for African development and growth. African farms were forced to change their crop choices to export crops like cocoa, coffee, and sugar, while the most important products needed for African food security, such as corn, rice, wheat, and for African industrialization like cotton and seed oils production, were discouraged. Some agricultural lands were turned into mining sites, and child labor is still being used to exploit mineral resources for a pittance, as can be seen in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, South Africa, Zimbabwe, Sudan, and others. This situation forces Africa to import a significant part of its food supply, threatening continent-wide food security. While the colonial empires were ended in Africa, the Nixon shock forced the dollar on African states as the common currency. The US dollar used to be backed by gold until the Nixon shock of 1971 to 1973, when the dollar became a fiat currency. In effect, the United States regime just prints dollars and uses them in exchange for valuable African minerals, along with agricultural and industrial commodities. To juxtapose this, an American company can come to Africa with greenbacks and use them to buy gold, lithium, cobalt, coltan, cocoa, coffee bean, iron ore, and sugar for the purpose of American industrial development and also American consumption, while Africans are paid little in return. Even so, the U.S.-controlled multilateral institutions, including the IMF and World Bank, advise African governments to obtain loans to cover their budget deficits. Through these channels, the greenback finds its way back to American pockets, leaving Africans to continue in a perpetual circle of poverty and exploitation. The multipolar system of BRICS, however, provide a way out for the global south, especially Africans, in a way that has never been possible before. BRICS is a forum for cooperation among a group of leading emerging economies. It comprises 9 countries, including Russia, China, Brazil, India, South Africa, Iran, Egypt, Ethiopia, the United Arab Emirates. BRICS has also admitted 9 partner countries, including Belarus, Bolivia, Cuba, Indonesia, Kazakhstan, Malaysia, Thailand, Uganda, and Uzbekistan. From the list above, Africa has 3 full members and 1 partner country within the BRICS group. The concept of BRICS is to promote a multipolar system. This allows countries to trade between themselves in their local currencies, while backing their currency with their commodities. This is exemplified by trade between China and Russia, which hit over $200 billion in the last 9 months of 2024, and is conducted more than 95% in Chinese yuan and Russian rubles. Africa is a source-rich continent which is blessed with vast mineral resources in addition to agricultural production, which can be used to back African local currencies. For instance, trade between China and Africa in the first 7 months of 2024 rose by 5.6% to $167 billion. Chinese exports to African countries amounted to $97 billion during the period, while African exporters registered $69 billion in sales to China, principally driven by raw materials. With such volumes, however, African nations currently need dollars to supply financial institutions and conduct their trade with China. An alternative is to use their local currencies to import what they need from China and receive payment in Chinese yuan through their own banks. BRICS offers this opportunity. When African governments join BRICS, they open a window of unprecedented growth for their local economies using their actual value to global trade. This helps stabilize their economies, maximize economic potential, and shield them from overly inflated dollars that often exploit their exports, weaken their economies, and threaten their general well-being. Thus, it is imperative that African leaders rid themselves of the neocolonial mentality and work together with the BRICS countries to join the formidable, inevitable rise of the multipolar world for the greater good of the continent. No country can isolate itself when implementing an important reform program that will help it bring progress and development. Joining the multipolar order via BRICS is a solution to that. Some African governments have tried to conduct their own trade in local currencies with foreign countries. For instance, Nigeria and China signed a currency swap agreement in 2017, which was renewed in 2024. This deal was meant to allow Nigerian importers to have access to yuan through Nigeria's central bank for their trade with Beijing. However, due to lobbying and manipulation by the IMF and the World Bank, the agreement has stalled. If Nigeria had joined the BRICS, it would have been much easier for the country to back its naira in international trade with the countries of BRICS, including China, India, Brazil, Russia, and the UAE. This scenario applies to all African countries not aligned with the multipolar order and the BRICS system, Ghana and Kenya included. Despite their richness in terms of gold deposits, the Ghana economy is struggling due to a lack of available dollars for its trade on the global market. Ghana has no control over its gold reserves due to the colonial hangover and has not been able to grow due to its attachment to the dollar-only international trading system. For African states, joining the BRICS group is the best way to truly obtain economic independence. The new multipolar world order opens orders to multiple options for forming useful alliances within the international community. BRICS will unlock Africa's true potential, build stronger ties with key industrialized countries, China, Russia, and India, making it possible to restore African industries, create job opportunities for ordinary Africans, and encourage upward mobility.
Thank you.